Support for KNKX comes from Portage Bay Cafe, now offering hot breakfast platters for business meetings and corporate events with delivery throughout Greater Seattle. Portage Bay Cafe emphasizes local organic ingredients from Pacific Northwest farmers and distributors. PortageBayCafe.com.
Welcome back to the KNKX studios. I'm Abe Beeson, and today we're bringing it on home with one of Seattle's busiest sax players, Peter Daniel. He's the leader of the 45th Street Brass and a regular with the funk-style brass band, the Super Crew. He's on recent records by Lucky Brown and the SGs and Marina and the Dreamboats. He's been seen on stage working with Jim Curl's Swing Session Big Band, electro duo Odessa, alt-popper Father John Misty, and Seattle institution Funky 2 Death. He seems to be spending most hours of every day playing music. When you see Peter Daniel, chances are there's fantastic music nearby. He is living the life of a journeyman musician, and Peter's brought a wonderful band with him to our studios today. Check out Joe Doria on the organ, Andy Coe playing guitar, drummer Xavier Lecouturier. Please help me welcome the Peter Daniel Quartet. Peter Daniel Quartet in the KNKX studios. That's Peter playing his alto saxophone, Joe Doria at the Hammond organ, Andy Coe guitar, Xavier LeCouturier drumming. A nice tune for the lunch hour, Applesauce.
Applesauce. That's by a Lucky good one. Brown.
Great to have you here again, Peter. This is a wonderful band, and you were supposed to play Tulas tonight.
Yes, we were. We were one of the first casualties of the Tulas closing, one of the early casualties.
Can you tell us about how that affects musicians around town? I mean, we've talked about it before it happened.
Yeah.
Now that it's over.
Yeah, everyone's pretty bummed about it, understandably. For me, it was one of my early gateways into the Seattle music scene in general. Going in high school, going and hanging out there, and jam sessions led by Mark Seals, and I used to check out Don Lanfear playing there. And it will definitely be a place that is missed. There will be a lot of bands that are homeless after Tulas closes down. So, I'm hoping I know that the Seattle scene is going to continue to thrive, and I'm hoping that there are various other places that are going to help pick up some of the slack that's created by the lack of Tulas.
Yeah, you said it. Several places around town to play.
Yeah.
None of them like Tulas with night after night after night of jazz, but there are mm-hmm. several places that have jazz once a week, maybe twice, three times a week.
Right.
And it's kind of turning into what you've talked about online is the life of a journeyman musician. You got to be prepared to hustle and find all the different places to play. You were talking about how you're loving that life right now.
Yeah, sure. Well, I had another gig this morning, actually, if you want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came from a brass band gig. We were playing the opening of the PCC in West Seattle.
Right on.
And we'll be opening the Ballard one next month, too. It's like you said at the beginning. That's quite an introduction, by the way. Thank you. When you say it like that, it sounds like a problem. when you lay it all out. It's trying to just create as much opportunity as you can, and it's hard for any one project to do that. And my emphasis has always been on creating a living as a saxophone performer. So I consider myself sort of a blue-collar, working-class musician, just sort of making the rounds and in all the bands.
Could you give us a little list, a rundown of some of the projects, recordings you're working on right now?
Yeah, sure. We're in the middle of a sort of a 45th Street brass recording project. Got a couple in the can now and plans to do more in the future. Let's see, just finished a record with Jason Denton that Joe was also on. We hopped in the studio last weekend and did that with the F2D horn section, which is also the True Love's horn section and the 45th Street Brass horn section and the, whatever else horn section, Super Crew horn section. I'm not the only one who does this, is what I'm saying.
Right.
I really like that. I remember I was watching one of the Stevie Wonder tributes, that they did a couple years ago down in L.A., and all the stars got to come up and sing a Stevie tune, and Stevie got to come up and sing. And I was looking at the band like, yeah, that section gets to play with all those awesome people and play all those rad songs all night long. Like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the fun part.
That's living. That's living the life.
Yeah.
Now, talk about staying in shape to play in a lot of different settings. You're playing a lot of different styles of music in different buildings, from beer-soaked bars to family-friendly halls. And it seems like that's also just dreamy, but there must be some challenges to that as well.
Everything's a little bit different. Everything requires a different approach. Outdoor gigs, indoor gigs, sound system, good sound guy, bad sound guy, monitors, no monitor, all that sort of stuff. So trying to be as versatile as possible and trying to be as independent as possible too, not dependent on any environmental factors, but just show up like, what do I need to succeed for this gig? And figuring that out. A lot of people have figured out their own methods to success. And so it's just about finding what works for you.
A lot of those methods go beyond just practicing your instrument and practicing with other players and playing the music. Can you talk a little bit about your experience working in the business part of the showbiz world?
It's an undeniable fact these days.
Yeah.
I kind of looked around and a lot of the guys who had careers I envied were pretty good at the music business side of things too. It's like, all right, well, I can either wait for one of them to call me or I can just, get up and do it myself.
Right.
And it's a really tough balance. It's always nice to have help. I notice the people that succeed the most are the ones that have the teams around them and the people that believe in them. And so, we're trying to build that up and in the meantime, it's a lot of emails, a lot of hours spent, just sending the same emails to the same people and waiting for them to respond because everyone's busy.
Right.
Everyone's busy. So
now you also had some experience, though you're no longer there. You worked at Origin Records for a while.
Absolutely.
That's another quickly changing industry. And I wonder if you picked up any useful tips working over at Origin.
Oh, countless. John Bishop was a fantastic mentor to have for, better part of a decade. And it really showed me how the industry works. It showed me what to expect from releasing music, you know, how to operate as a working musician. I mean, John is a guy who, you know, back over the decades has been as busy as I've been at times and busier than me, you know, in his heyday. So just seeing that, getting those lessons from him and always coming back in and kind of telling him, okay, here's what I did this weekend, and then him telling me how I could have done it better or could have, you know, made more or whatever it was. So always having that, you know, that portal into, you know, I mean, he's part of the Seattle Jazz Institution. Sharing a kitchen with that guy was really, really valuable. I will definitely say that.
Now, another thing that's been a big slice of the pie of your career has been education. In fact, one of the early introductions I had to your band, 45th Street Brass, was from one of our School of Jazz guest DJs who brought in a CD they had burned of your music and said, "You got to listen to this guy, my teacher, Peter Daniel." And there must be other cool benefits besides just getting your band promoted when you're working with students. And
yeah, that's a nice benefit, though. Yeah, that's a nice benefit. I mean, I have benefited over the years from some amazing teachers and programs. Mount Terrace High School, Darren Fall, Bruce Wilson, you know, David Fagan at Spokane. And I feel it's important to, you know, give back, to contribute to the up-and-comers. A lot of people contributed to my success. You know, just to the best I can, just kind of offer what things I have learned and continue to learn and the lessons that I come across. And a lot of times I'll come in like, hey, here's what I've been working on. Here's what I figured out. Let's work on it together. You know, it's also nice to have a benefit of, like, it keeps me trying to, you know, figure out new things and stay one step ahead of some of my really good students.
Yeah. And you're talking really about the jazz community that we have around here, not just students, but the people you're playing with, these fine, wonderful musicians.
Yeah.
The conversations you have before, during, and after a gig can be really educational. And also, you get a great deal of support from the musicians around town who are there to lift you up when you're down. And can you talk a little bit about having those music friends around town?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone needs those. Like, we're creative people, and so we're very emotional people, and we're, you know, a lot of us, myself, absolutely, and I've had a lot of conversations with friends about, like, the highs and lows the industry provides, and they often go hand in hand. You know, people talk about coming off the road and offer great experience, show tour experience, and that post-show depression, you know, and I, at least, you know, again, speaking for myself, I think a lot of us can feel like imposter syndrome is, you know, what I've heard it called, you know, that belief that you're just not quite there. So it's nice to have the community around, you know, people you trust and play with, and whether it's verbally and blatantly or just musically, you know, and get together in a room with musicians as amazing as this and just make you feel great about life. So
I've also been excited. I know you and a lot of the people here in the room are pushing to expand the musical community beyond the city limits. And you've been down to New Orleans quite a few times. You've got some good connections down there. And I wondered if you could talk about how important it is to be able to break outside the bubble and connect with people from around the country, around the world.
Totally. I mean, staying connected to the national, international music scene is really important for the vibrancy of this scene, for variety, for new ideas. We're geographically relatively isolated. Touring the West Coast has always been harder than touring the East Coast because of the distance in between the various markets and the larger cities. So being able to go down to some of these places, make connections, meet musicians who are, you know, a lot of the people I meet were doing the same thing I'm doing here. It's like, oh, yeah, I have two gigs Thursday, one on Friday, and then three over the weekend. You want to come to one of those? It's like, yes, I do. See you at half of them. So it's nice to know that, you know, there are people in every city. I mean, even out in New York, you know, everyone's afraid of New York. You go out there, there's tons of guys just doing the same thing too. And, you know, there's a different level of musicianship in some of these places, different emphasis and different styles and all that. But there are just, you know, there are people just trying to make it everywhere you go. So it's nice to be reminded of that as well, you know, that larger perspective. And that helps kind of with what we were talking about earlier with that, like, okay, it's not just me alone in this. Everyone's fighting the good fight. Everyone's, you know, succeeding.
Yeah, a lot of that collaboration can happen on stage.
Yeah.
For you, in settings where you're with a band on stage that welcomes or sometimes doesn't necessarily welcome people to get up off the floor and join you on stage, could you tell us a little bit about the etiquette of the jam session situation or the sitting-in etiquette?
Are you referring to a specific incident, Abe?
Well, you know, sometimes things go well, sometimes they don't go so well. I know you've got some stories.
Yeah, I got some stories. The sit-in etiquette, maybe we'll get around to it. Sit-in etiquette is tough, and I still struggle with it too. I've talked to guys like Joe, you know, who hosts a bunch of regular sessions around the scene, and I was kind of come up on break and like, hey man, you know, I'm here, and I don't even know whether to bring my horn in. It seems presumptuous, and it can seem arrogant, and it can seem out of place, or, you know, or it can be totally welcoming. So, you know, it's having a personal relationship with the musician is important, I think, you know, or you know, having some sort of connection before you just jump on onto a stage. I've definitely been that guy though that just jumps onto a stage before too, and you know it's not always. Sometimes it's called for. Sometimes you get kicked off. I've been kicked off too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've also had the.
You've been the kicker offer.
I've been the kicker offer before.
We got to tell this story.
I've been the kicker offer.
I know. In the heat of the moment, you don't know who that getting up on stage.
Yeah. End of the night and all right. So, oh boy, we're doing this. So I feel the need to give some context to the story.
Please, we got the time.
We'd had this was the Sea Monster Friday Night Band F2D, and we'd had a bunch of people coming in and sitting in, just a bunch of random people we didn't know, a random harmonica guy who brought the wrong harmonica, like in the wrong key. And so some of these people need to be told that, hey, look, you know, we're not a jam band. You're not necessarily, you know, we're not just open to all comers, so please and thank you and no. And some of them don't always. So... we'd gone through a rash of this recently, there were like three or four people over the past 2 months. And so then we reach a certain night where it's the end of the night, and there's a gentleman who's in the dance floor with his just trumpet in hand. And I will say, I asked around, and people asked me, hey, who's that trumpet player?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I said, I don't know.
Nobody knew who it was.
No one knew who it was. So I was like, all right, well, given the whole recent thing, I know he's got a trumpet in his hand, but I just don't want him, you know. We've had enough of that. Mm-hmm. So we start playing a song, and without talking to anyone, he walks up and starts playing along the horn line to the song, Stevie Wonder tune. So I asked him to stop. I will say also it didn't sound great. So I asked him to stop, and he didn't hear me. It was a loud club, and I leaned in and famously said, please don't do that. And so he walked off stage, and then about a song and a half later, after taking off his hat and glasses in the corner, the tenor player leans over to me and goes, Pete, I think that's Roy Hargrove. And I just couldn't feel my feet at that moment. yes, absolutely, great. So you know, he was then invited back to play, of course, and I went and had a whiskey.
Great story. One last thing. Since I met you and since I first heard the 45th Street Brass doing their unique style of brass music, I consider you an important figure in modern jazz here in our city. You always seem to be on stage or a breath away from on stage at some of the coolest shows in town.
Thank you.
And I feel like your generation, this generation of musicians here, is going to be bringing their own perspective to jazz. And I wonder if you could talk about the things in your life of your generation that you feel like you bring to the music.
Yeah, that's a tough question. I mean, everyone, it's a hard one too. It's hard to generalize, you know. I mean, music is so personal, and you bring something to the table, and someone else hears something else in the exact same work. You walk off stage feeling you did a terrible job, and someone else says, "Man, that was a great solo," you know. So what you bring into it is just as diverse, and it's just as varied. And sometimes it's clear as a bell to you, and sometimes the music means something else to other people. I think that's one thing I love about art and music, is the fact that it is so subjective and it can mean so many things to so many different people. And I think the most important thing is authenticity, right? No matter what you are playing, no matter what style how you're expressing stylistically the music that you want to share, as long as you believe it and you're authentic about it and you're passionate about it, that's going to translate, and that's what people are going to respond to. I had a gig on cruise ships for a couple of years, and we had a jazz night, and I just knew that was never ever going to draw any people. It's like, all right, we're doing what we want to do. Like, this is going to be our, you know, 2 hours in the week to not play anyone else's stupid music and just play our thing. Mm-hmm. And we would you know, get between 3 and 24 people that would come in the lounge and hang out. And most weeks, someone would come up and say, you know, I don't really like jazz, but you guys are having fun, and I had to sit down and listen to it. You know, so that's like. It's not always about what's being played. It's about how you're playing it, you know.
Right on.
So I think that's my answer.
All right, let's put these four personalities together and have some fun. We got Peter Daniel on his alto saxophone, Joe Doria at the Hammond organ, Andy Coe has brought his axe, which he is slinging today, and Xavier LeCouturier featured on the drums. Let's have some more music from the Peter Daniel Quartet in the KNKX studios. place. The Peter Daniel Quartet in the KNKX studios. Peter Daniel on his alto saxophone, Joe Doria at the Hammond organ, Andy Coe guitar, and Xavier Lecouturier featured on the drums. Let's have some more music from the Peter Daniel Quartet in the KNKX studios. saxophonist Peter Daniel and his quartet in the KNKX studios. Joe Doria on the Hammond organ, Andy Coe guitar, with Xavier Lecouturier drumming. Thank you so much for being here, Peter.
Thank you. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that one of our tunes was written by Lucky Brown and our second tune was written by Kate Olson. Fantastic musicians on the scene, so representing some of Seattle.
Wonderful music, sir. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks, Abe. Thank you, KNKX.
And thanks also to the members of our leadership circle, everyone in our audience, your generous contributions, the support of all the KNKX listeners make our studio sessions possible. You can connect to the massive archives at knkx.org. Big thanks to our studio session sponsors, Portage Bay Cafe, and thanks to Brian Moynihan for his audio production. And that wraps up another incredible KNKX studio session.